Okay, ladies and gentlemen, our next plenary is going to be from Commissioner Stephen Burns. The Honorable Stephen Burns was sworn in as a commissioner in the U.S. NRC on November 2014 to a term ending June 2019. Commissioner Burns has had a distinguished career with the NRC and internationally as well. He was our 16th chairman from January of 2015 through January of 2017. And immediately prior to rejoining the NRC, Commissioner Burns was head of legal affairs at the Nuclear Energy Agency, that's part of the Organization for Economic Cooperation in Paris, France, from 2012 to 2014. Commissioner Burns was a career employee at the NRC from 1978 to 2012, and he served as the NRC's general counsel from May 2009 to April 2012. As I'm sure you've already heard, this will be Commissioner Burns' last Regulatory Information Conference. As he stated, that he will not be seeking an additional term after his current term expires. So please join me in welcoming Commissioner Burns.
Thanks, Howard. Commissioner.
No card.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here. Are the slides going to go up? Yeah, okay. So I thought I would take you through, as Ho's already given you my career path, 1978, 40 years ago, I joined the agency. Now, there's something about that number 40. If we think about Moses and the Israelites, they wandered through the wilderness for 40 years. Noah survived 40 days of rain. Jesus and Muhammad both went into seclusion and prayer for 40 days before they emerged and carried out their missions. So 40 is something. All it is, it's a long time, and maybe it's time for you to move on. And that's what I plan to do. But for this 40 years for me, there are two NRC acts and one in the middle. So we're going to see, here's Act 1. And Margie sort of set the stage here. She talked about Marie Kondo. And what I hope to do today is to share some pictures as I clear out my files that give me joy. And all. This is one. I guess I was a little darker of hair. But look at that modern computer that's sitting on the desk. This is about 30 years ago when I was in the chairman's office working for a chairman, not I didn't gray that much being the chairman for about 2 years or so. So that was my first act, my first time around at the NRC, which, as Ho mentioned, and concluded with when I retired as general counsel in 2012. And then I came back to town in November 2014. There's Allison, and in the middle is my wife, Joan, who's joining me today, just trying to figure out what I've been doing with myself for these 40 years, I guess. So over the course of this time, and of course when I came back into town, I left this view from my office for this one. I guess Paris is a little more elegant than Rockville Pike. But in any event, with that in mind, I'm going to try to reflect on what I've learned and what the fun I've had, some highlights and lowlights, perhaps, of my career, and the lessons that I can bequeath you, as wise as I am after this 40 years wandering in the wilderness. When I joined the NRC in 1978, fresh out of law school, you know, dark of hair, as you can see, I was eager to begin my career in public service. And I came to the NRC, then a fledgling agency, just spreading its wings, barely 3 years old. Joe Hendry was the chairman. The NRC, as they say, was at its beginning. If the agency was human, we would say it was a toddler. And I think, frankly, that's a good description of it at the time. The NRC was trying hard to find its feet, if you will, while it was scattered around a dozen offices in the Washington area. The commission downtown, about two blocks from the White House, in a building I'm also told was a bomb shelter. For me, I was living in the district, recently been married, and I was commuting up to Bethesda when the metro stopped at DuPont Circle, and I then had to get on the bus with the cleaning ladies going out to Bethesda at the time. The commission again was downtown, as I said, and so I'm going to talk about my first commission meeting barely two months into my tenure at the NRC. Here's the commission hearing room downtown at H Street. And at my first commission meeting, I had an important job as a young attorney with a rigorous education, a great background. I had the privilege of flipping the presentation slides for the overhead projector at that. Now, some of you have no idea what I'm talking about because you're used to PowerPoint. And yes, you know, when we said cut and paste and you do that on your computer, we used to actually cut and paste. That was a way to make sure people didn't comment on your documents too much because they didn't want to go on. So the commission met in those days in a long, narrow room. It's kind of dark, instead of the amphitheater that you're all used to today with the commission. However, there's one of the things that is constant is actually the commission table. So we still sit around the table that the commission was using that 40 years ago. I remember Admiral Zeck, when he was chairman, there was some proposal to do, can you imagine this, in 1988, digitize the commission's hearing table or whatever. But the cost was some astronomical amount, and he said, heck no. And the admiral basically said, we're taking the table up to Rockville. And that's where it came in 1988. So in any event, I hardly could believe that I would go from flipping transparency slides in 1978 to eventually becoming a commissioner and sitting as chair at that table and sitting as a commissioner as I do today. That's something I didn't expect in my career. So what would I say is the lessons learned from all of that commission meeting in my early days at the NRC? And it's probably not a surprising one. It's that I think we work better and that we communicate better when we are, in fact, together. And the consolidation of the NRC's headquarters in 1988 was a significant accomplishment. It took a while to get there. But we were no longer spread out, taking shuttle buses, trying to figure out how to get downtown. The communication among us, both at the commission level and at the staff level, was greatly improved. So, as a young lawyer, it says it was not my job simply to sit in the office and expound on the great things I had learned in those 3 years of law school. I needed to do some other things. And I want to tell you about some of my journeys. And it wasn't sometimes the work that was so much interesting. It was those side things that just happened to occur. One of them happened in 1980, and I got to go to the Iowa State Fair. Why? Because I was representing the agency in an Iowa State Commerce Commission proceeding that we got dragged into, because I hate to say it, our management in Region 3 didn't think at that time to call the lawyers and see whether we ought to be pulled into a Commerce Commission hearing. So I was out there to represent two of our inspectors who were called to testify. Well, this is one of these contentious things where between basically the utility and the Public Service Commission is about who is going to pay for some repair work that had been done. And it seemed like actually they started coming close to a settlement. So the judge, or basically the commission at the time, decided to suspend the hearing for a day. Well, we weren't going to fly back to Washington or Chicago, so what else could we do? We went to the Iowa State Fair. We had a great steak. We saw the animals. We saw the fruits and vegetables. So anyway, you take your adventures as they can come. Now, another one. Here's me in Billings, Montana, also in 1985, a few years later. The point on this one was we went out to Billings, Montana, because we had a well logger who was storing its sources in a facility that it was not authorized to do. It wasn't reporting things under 10 CFR Part 150. For those of you who don't know, that's the reciprocity provisions with our agreement states. So the agency imposed an $1,800 fine. Now, the guy asked for a hearing. The well logger asked for a hearing. And I figured eventually it took us $6,000 to go prosecute the civil penalty case and to recover it. But the fact of the matter is, I think it was worth it. And it was both definitely worth it because what this agency has to do sometimes is stand up for the requirements it imposes and to assure that the safety requirements and the obligations of a licensee are met. But in the meantime, when the hearing was over, I got to go up on the overlooking Billings up to Boot Hill Cemetery and have my picture taken by my co-counsel, whose reflection you can see there, or shadow you can see there. One other one I want to mention. Now, this is not the La Crosse boiling water reactor, I want you to remember. But I did get to see the Heilemann six-pack in La Crosse, the world's biggest six-pack. And if you're interested, one person could get a six-pack of a day for 3,351 years. That's what it says on the back of the postcard. Now, why was I in La Crosse? Well, I was in La Crosse because, again, as part of our oversight and enforcement activities, I was there because there were some questions about whether the seismic profile for the Lac Bar, as we used to call it, was sufficient after in the time. And there was the licensee wound up eventually doing the test, the soil liquefaction test that we wanted them to do. But in the meantime, a hearing had been requested by a local public interest group, so we went out to La Crosse to conduct that hearing. Eventually decided that what the licensee had done was fine. But again, you got to find adventures. And going to the La Crosse six-pack and actually seeing, you could see the reactor from the top of the brewery. And that was that's before they served you at the very end. So I want to take one maybe a little more serious. So one of the actually most interesting things I had done in my career as a lawyer on the staff was I wound up going to the Davis-Besse plant for 8 days, sort of at a drop of a hat. Basically what happened is there was a loss of feed water transient in June 1985, probably one of the most significant, if not the most significant transient that had happened since the Three Mile Island accident. And at that point, the agency was standing up its fledgling incident investigation program. This was something that actually came out of the recommendations from the Three Mile Island reviews. And the agency was really trying to, as they say at that point, still getting its feet on the ground in terms of things like evaluating operating experience, understanding human behavior, human actions. And so this was an important investigation. But what happened? Licensees started lawyering up. And so if they're going to lawyer up, we were going to lawyer up. And my problem was I was in the office too late that day, so I got a trip to Toledo starting the next morning. But all kidding aside, I found this, again, one of the most interesting things I ever did because it really had me working very closely with our technical staff and really getting an idea of really seeing firsthand how they approach issues, the seriousness and respect what they had for licensee staff and operators, but going through and methodically evaluating and considering what had happened during this transient. What were the things that the operators saw? What got in their way? And I have to say, I also had a lot of respect for the operators because although they had made some mistakes, the people in the control room and the AUX operators recovered and stopped this transient from becoming a really worse event. They, in terms of figuring out what they had done wrong, taking the steps to correct it, and also owning up to it. So I really look at this as one of the most significant events that I had a role in during the early part of my career. I want to also, as a early part of my career, I started to do a lot more international engagement and international travel. This is one I got to go. That's actually Ambassador Walcott in the middle there, who's now our representative for the United States at the mission in Vienna. And I got to accompany her into Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Indonesia, and Thailand in 2008. As part of a mission to talk about things like the 123 agreements and the potential assistance the United States might be able to offer should those countries have pursued a new build. You're seeing a reactor built by General Atomics in the late 1950s, defueled in the 1960s because there were some other things going on in Vietnam, and eventually refueled by the Russians after the Vietnam conflict came to an end. I've also got to do a certain amount of travel as part of one of the things I really enjoy, and that is education in nuclear regulation and nuclear law. That got me to Amman, Jordan, with a group of people from the North Africa and the Gulf states. Actually, one of them is actually Farouk El-Tawila right there in the middle, who used to work at the NRC, was working with the UAE at the time. But one of the great things, I got to do a side trip there. I got to go to Petra. And believe it or not, I had taken some marshmallow peeps with me. Now, some of my international friends are going to say, what is a peep? It is a marshmallow, those little things up there, those are marshmallow candies. And they become very, very famous. So I took them along. I took this in front of the famous treasury in Petra that was in the one of the Raiders of the Lost Ark movie, and I won a prize from National Geographic, so I got a free magazine subscription, and they even, Kathy Lee Gifford actually even mentioned it on the Today Show. So, you know, why wouldn't I work here? But I want to talk about some other travel, too, and more recently. I really enjoyed, as a commissioner and as chairman, going around, meeting with my colleagues around the world, and it's taken me to some fantastic places. The Rock Laboratory in Sweden and the Finnish Repository, going 450 meters or more under the earth, is really quite of an experience, kind of a weird feeling you get. Into India to see the power stations there and their laboratories. This is me scramming the reactor in Prague. Now, don't, you know, they told me to do it, so don't, you know, don't hold it against me. One of the other things, too, I got to go to Korea last year, and for me, also to go to the demilitarized zone. Here's the general who's in charge of the three different forces in Korea. But one of the things that was very meaningful for me is because when I was born in New York City in 1953, my father was in Korea during the Korean conflict. That's him on the left there. And he was responsible for the engineering detail that built the hut in which the armistice agreement was signed in 1953, and of course, of which there's been a lot more talk most recently with the president's visits to Korea, his visits to Korea, and the question of further demilitarization or denuclearization in the Korean Peninsula. One of the other things I did, too, this past year was go to Chernobyl. I visited the Fukushima site about 4 years ago and had been to Three Mile Island, but I had wanted to go to Chernobyl, really, because this accident really is something, not only a tragedy, which we wish would have never occurred and we work to prevent for the future, but also because it really is the catalyst for the international framework. Nuclear safety. And it was important to see this and the cooperation that's gone on between the European Union, the United States, Japan, other countries, to build this the new safe confinement. Really an incredible achievement. And there you see in the background, me on the right there and two of my staff members with me, you see the ruined Unit 4 where the accident occurred in 1986. But it's not all about international travel. We do things here at home, and obviously the most important part of our work is our domestic responsibilities for oversight and regulation and licensing within the United States. So I've always thought it's also important to get out and see what we regulate. I will give my colleague, Chairman Savinicki, credit because she's hit every one of the plants. I haven't been able to do that. But the ones I have, I've been able to see a lot, and it is important from my standpoint to do that because it gives us a better understanding of what we're regulating, what some of the issues are, and to try to understand. So I've been out there, some power reactors, obviously, some research facilities, the construction sites. This is me at Vogtle just a couple weeks ago. The control rooms, I'm not scrambling that one. I think that's a simulator as it is. I think that's up in Canada at Darlington. And also hospitals and materials licensees. I think this is the one where I'm actually trying to do the mock implant of the seeds for prostate thing. It says, I'm not a doctor. I know why I became a lawyer. That's not for me. And here we are looking at Pebble Bed down at Texas A&M. I want to talk about a couple other things. One thing, this is kind of ironic because we're very close on the reissuance of the Seabrook license. But I'll talk about one of the things I will take credit for, and that is back in 1990 when the Seabrook license was coming up before the commission. And there was a planned protest in front of the White Flint building that we knew about. And the question was, we didn't know how many people would show up for it. Now, back then, the bottom of the building at White Flint was actually pretty open. You could more or less walk in. There were pretensions that the operator of the cafeterias thought that people would just come in off the street and eat in one of our little cafeterias or sandwich shops or whatever. So the staff decided, says, we're not going to have the building open because, you know, bathroom access and things, because, you know, people might want to use the bathroom or something like that. So there was a conundrum. And at that time, I was the executive assistant to Chairman Carr, and the important decision I had to make whether was to give the staff go-ahead to rent 10 porta-potties to put on the White Flint campus. We did. We approved it. And I think we wound up being so generous that everybody here in this picture, which was the full extent of the protest that day, everybody had a porta potty. So those are great things. But what I want to say with that is, what's my takeaway here? Obviously, NRC operates in an arena that's inherently controversial. You know, we have a right in this country to debate, to raise our voices, and to have a voice, even to protest, is not something that we should take lightly or dispel lightly. It doesn't mean you can throw compost at people, like we've had a problem with in a couple circumstances, and we need to be respectful of each other. But we as members of the commission are here to hear the listen to and weigh external opinions and then make safety and security decisions as we're called upon to do. And knowing that sometimes we're not going to keep everybody happy, but that's the case. That's the democracy we live in. I'll just share a few other things. 2011, atomic cupcakes. This is at the National Press Club. I think when then-Chairman Yatsko was talking about Fukushima, talk about the tackiest thing you could do given the subject matter. But the cupcakes were pretty good. And then, of course, through my years, I've had impeccable fashion sense. You know, this is what I wear in the office every day. Sometimes we have celebrations, and I've been happy to wear my kurta that I bought in India a few years ago at our annual Diwali celebration. And this was just a great picture with our Ukrainian counterpart this past year in the Ukraine. And of course, for a long time, and a lot of people in the General Council know, I was Santa. And this is perhaps my best sartorial composition. But putting the humor aside for a moment, one of the things I think there is a good record of is this: our appearances in front of the Congress. So there are a lot of pictures of us before the Congress. I think I had 12 congressional hearings when as chairman, and 6 more as a commissioner. And that, of course, doesn't include basically the one-on-one meetings we may have, drop-in visits with members. Preparing for these briefings is somewhat more difficult than hearings themselves. Sometimes you go through the murder boards, you're trying to figure out all the type of information you think you might be asked or the like. And one gets intelligence. We thank our Congressional Affairs Office for that. But, obviously it's sort of like you're going to get questions out of left field sometime. But the fact of the matter is that we're there because we have a responsibility to be responsive to the legislative branch and to be able to answer their questions, to rationalize what it is we do as an agency, and that we do it responsibly in both the manner that tracks with our statutory goals, as well as within the budget that we are appropriated from the Congress. So I think sometimes that's a difficult thing to do. It's not always the fun thing to do, but it is part, again, what I view as our goals in this democracy and one of the things that we have to adhere to. Of course, over the years, I think there have been any number of crises that I've seen that and been at the agency that we have worked through, Three Mile Island, obviously 9/11, Fukushima, other challenges in terms of how the agency has performed or how it works. We have to, for better or worse, keep our eyes focused and reflect sometimes on mistakes that we may make. And over the decades, as we've already heard, I think, from the chairman and the EDO and Commissioner Barron, we struggle sometimes with the question of how much regulation is enough to be within what we consider to be that adequate protection of public health and safety and the common defense and security. And I spoke at the RIC of the regulatory craft, and that is that our focus on how we best look at and how we best address those challenges that we face as a regulator about giving that balance of finding that sweet spot of really employing and practicing the regulatory craft. And I spoke, as I say, at the RIC about this, and we have over time, we have to use our broad discretion to impose requirements we believe that meet the mandate of adequate protection. We can't be too lax or too strict, whether that's in the security or the safety arena. We have to consider real life and actual operating experience, weigh public and stakeholder input to guard against making decisions in isolation. And I believe we've worked hard and we've done our best at that over the years. I think I tried to do that as chairman, as commissioner, to practice that regulatory craft. And when I look across, the time I've been at the agency, I'm proud of some of my contributions, primarily as a lawyer, but also as a chairman or commissioner, to things like those post-TMI implementation of safety improvements, the maintenance rule that Chairman Carr was so passionate about, license renewal, Part 52, security after 9/11. And now our efforts to transform, as you've heard them in today's earlier presentations. We're here, as I called it last year, reformed and reforming. And now we are transforming. That's the word we're using. And I think it is a good focus, and it gives us something It's more than ephemeral. It's about how we take things on, how we think through things, how we say, not just because we've always done it this way, but because it makes the best sense for safety and for security. And at the end of the day, when I look past on my career, what's counted the most, and I think it's the people. The people I've had a pleasure to work with, to get to know, who've become my friends, they are too many to name all here. So I give you a picture of the chairman's staff when I was on it in 1990 with Chairman Carr. I'm up there, second from the left in the back row. And my staff, when I was in the chairman's office, many of whom are still with me today, Tracy Stokes, Andy Cianci, Johari Moore, Jason Zorn, Steve Baggett, Kathleen Blake, Claire Caspudis, and Nan Valier. They've been a great help and support to me over these last 4 years, and I wish them well as they continue, as well as I wish everyone from the NRC. I don't have a clear view of the horizon. No one really does. I know there will not be a third act for me. I'm starting to fill up those boxes, seeing whether they give me joy. My wife is really pushing me on that one. And for the last time, as I put away the books and souvenirs and the memories of journeys and say goodbye, I'd like to say I've got a pithy quote for you. But I don't. So perhaps I should just do what this man did. Drop the mic, say goodbye, thank you for it all. Thank you. Oh, I'm going to walk in. Cool.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Burns, for those great remarks. We went a little bit over a time, so, you know, we went all in on the app, but we forgot how to use the timer right. So we'll please indulge us, because we do have a couple questions for Commissioner Burns. And Commissioner Burns, it's been great to work with you over the years, and we're going to get comfortable here. Yeah,
I feel like I'm in an IKEA showroom.
Well, the chair's going to break if it's IKEA furniture. Okay, so... by the way, the PEEP reference, I bet that's maybe even an acronym in the new reg that Commissioner Burns brought. But Commissioner Burns, this is also the 40th anniversary of the accident at Three Mile Island Unit 2. Do you feel that the level of oversight after 40 years of learning, improving, and enhancing is the right size for today's industry?
Well, I think it always requires some reflection and looking at it. Obviously, I actually had written a paper for a law journal on the impacts of the three major accidents, TMI, Chernobyl, and Fukushima, on the international legal framework. And it is astounding to me to read about what was or wasn't going on in 1979 in terms of things like operating experience. For example, the same event that happened at TMI happened at the Besnau plant in Switzerland. Nobody in the U.S. knew about it until we did the investigations. So what does that tell me? It says, I think we've come a long way. We really understood that operating experience, that human interaction, that, you know, the human-machine interface, but also human behavior and thinking through how you respond. I think we've gotten better about that. But it's something I think we can continually look at, because some of the things I think we thought were perhaps most significant in 1979 or 80 are maybe not what are the big drivers now. So this is this idea of being the learning organization, this transforming, reforming, and reformation and reforming that I spoke about.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. And we'll do one final question before the break here. We received a couple questions related to international activities. Mm-hmm. Can you give us your sense on what you consider the benefits of NRC's international cooperative activities to the mission of the NRC?
Well, I think there are a number of things. One I sort of mentioned is operating experience. That was something after Three Mile Island, the U.S. Push, and actually NEA, I'm pointing at my Mr. Magwood over there. Nuclear Energy Agency and the OECD actually adopted a principle that nuclear countries should share operating experience. That grew into with the IAEA. Look at Mr. Lentillo over there. That was adopted through the IAEA, and now that program is really jointly run. That's an extraordinarily important thing. So that sharing of operating experience. We leverage research by cooperating internationally. I think that, and it's, you know, that gives us a little more bang for our buck or bang for our euro or whatever currency you're using. And finally, it is, I think, the ongoing engagement that I really enjoy meeting with our counterparts. I enjoy seeing facilities that they regulate, hearing what they see as some of the challenges are. And I think that has a direct impact. This is so much more a global business or enterprise than when I came in 1979. Yeah, reactors are being sold, outside the country and all that. But the fact of the matter is what we hear and we talk about is so much more integrated. And I think that's just, that's come over the years. I think that is one of the clear impacts of the Convention on Nuclear Safety. And also a lot of talk that's gone on since the Chernobyl accident. It's reinforced, I think, in terms of Fukushima, how we look at things. So, for me, having worked here and also in an international organization, I am a big fan, as they say, of international cooperation and the benefits it brings.
Okay, thank you very much, Commissioner Burns. It's been a true honor and privilege to work with you in your time as an NRC attorney, while you were also the chairman of the NRC and now a commissioner. And thanks for all the advice in the apartment in Paris.
Yes.
We shared the same apartment, but not at the same time. But Commissioner, it's been wonderful to have you here. We're so glad for the remarks you've given us and the journey through your career. And thank you for everything you've done for the NRC, both domestically and international. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Okay, so thank you all for your attention here and allowing us to go about 15 minutes over. We would love you to come back at 11 o'clock sharp. We have Nathan Myhrvold, who will be giving us his special remarks. So thank you so much.